The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
If you're someone who's ever played Pokemon Go, you might have helped to train some delivery robots. Yes, you did hear that correctly. So why should we be paying attention to all of this and how does it work? Well, Elaine Burke is host of For Tech's Sake podcast and she's here now. Hello, Elaine.
Hi, how you doing?
Anyone who's been to an American city recently will have seen these little delivery robots roaming around the streets. They're like about the size of a small dog.
Yeah.
And they are delivering food, I would imagine, in the main and small packages. Is that what we're talking about here when we're talking about the Pokemon Go system training robots?
Yeah, so the robots that the company originally behind Pokemon Go is now working with are from Coco Robotics. And yes, they are in LA, Miami, a few other cities in the US, and also in Helsinki. So if you've been there, you might have seen them. And they can deliver, it's very specific, up to 8 pizzas. So that gives you an idea of the capacity if it's a food delivery and groceries, things like that. And they're on the ground. They're quite low to the ground as well, actually. Uh-huh. And they have cameras and sensors and things like that in order to navigate the streets and deliver things. But when you're trying to bring something to someone's doorstep for a delivery, you do need to have very precise location data to do that. And when we are navigating around the world, a lot of us rely on GPS, the little blue dot on your Google Maps. That's usually your point in the world as determined by a bunch of satellites way, way up in the sky. We don't really have this problem here in Ireland so much, but if you're in a really, really built up city that has a lot of high rise buildings, it can be quite hard for the GPS to get your very, very, very exact location, like to the centimeter.
Okay.
The way it can do if you're in a more open environment. And the reason why Coco Robotics is working with Niantic Spatial, this mapping company essentially that has spun out of what was the development of Pokemon Go, is that users of Pokemon Go created a data set of 30 billion street level images in cities all over the world that they have used to create what they call a visual positioning system, a VPS. So that little robot can be taking real time imagery from the street that it's on and compare that to a data set that comes from Pokemon Go users and other data sets that they've combined together
okay.
to do this.
So just go back to the Pokemon Go. When you're playing the game, you are actually operating in your neighborhood or in a location digitally.
Yeah.
That's how you play it.
It was a huge game when it first launched like 10 years ago. I was an avid player of it. I'm sure a lot of people listening were. But if you have no idea what it is a Pokemon based game, but it actually, as a video game, it makes you go outside and interact with the real world in order to play the game. You have to walk certain distances. You have to go to certain places physically in order to do things like battle your Pokemon in a gym. And those locations were usually based around landmarks. So I believe the Spire was one, but then there might have been some more random places around Ireland. So certain shops might have ended up being a Pokemon gym and then realizing, why are there so many people out on their phones in front of our mm-hmm. shop today? And those areas in like the Pokemon world, people could spin a disc in the app when they were at that location and try and do a task to win a prize. And if you were at a certain level in the game, that task could have been what was called an AR mapping task. So AR is augmented reality. It was part of the fun of the game was you could be using your camera to view the real world and see a Pokemon in that real world environment. So you're discovering Pokemon as you're out and about, mm-hmm. essentially.
But the other thing you were doing was providing data, which is being used now for these delivery robots. So
yes.
When players were using this game, were they aware of that? Or was that in the terms and conditions that everybody ticks without reading?
Exactly. It was in the privacy policy okay. that the data that you capture for these tasks could be used by the company and shared with a third party. So if you just glossed over the privacy policy, said agree because you just wanted to win your prize and play your game, you did sign up to that. Now, is that informed consent? There could be an argument to be made there that these people didn't realise that what they were providing was what was going to become a what has been described as a proprietary data set that company now owns and is monetizing. So mm-hmm. its users provided the labour to build that data set essentially by playing the game. Some users may have willingly done it anyway, even if they knew that that was the case. But I doubt that a lot of those users knew that this is how this
went. It makes you wonder what we're playing or using now that might be used for another, that labour, as you say, might be used for another purpose down the line. Well, it's always difficult to predict, isn't it?
Have you done a CAPTCHA recently, yes, you know.
Yeah, and have clicked you on the bikes in these pictures, yeah.
Why do you think it's always road-based images and captures?
Ah, uh-huh. Really?
Yes. Now, as far as I can tell, no one has explicitly gone on the record to say that this is used to train, say, autonomous vehicles and things like that. But it is highly suspected that captures that we fill out when we say this is a traffic light, this is a person on a bicycle, this is a car on the road, this is a bridge, this is all the kind of information that autonomous vehicles need in their labelling.
It's always road hardware or as you say, bikes or whatever. That's so interesting.
I suppose it's because like when it comes to launching movable robots into the general public and onto streets and stuff like that, you do need to be very, very safe and you will need a lot of data and a lot of training to make sure that those deployments can be rolled out as safely as possible. There have been challenges, there have been accidents, there have been even, I believe, some fatalities in these rollouts, but you want to minimise that as much as possible. Mm-hmm.
And when we say the robots are in some American cities, you mentioned Helsinki as well and LA and Miami, are they coming to all cities? Are we going to see them here soon?
Well, what's really interesting is later this year, we are going to see driverless cars, driverless taxis operating in London as part of a trial there. Now, the UK is working around having a safety framework that's based around that and everything. But what's quite interesting there is this is a huge test case for autonomous driving because the US cities that they currently operate in and even the cities across China that they currently operate in, they tend to have really, really big roads and a grid network for their layout of their city. It's not like a city like London that has evolved over a very, very long period of time and has very variable streets and roads and also a lot of human activity mm-hmm. in that city as well. And because the roads are a bit narrower, people are encroaching on the roads quite often as well. So if they can nail it in London, it will be a really huge leap forward, I think, to show that these technologies can
We had a robot in News Talk last week called Sam, who I met. He was a strange little fella. He was actually running up and down the floor outside in the office. But I had a chat with the guy who brought him in and who was operating him, and he was saying he will be in a year and a half working in warehouses.
Yeah, so this is the area of humanoid robots. Now, I would argue that if he wants a job in a warehouse, it would be better to build a robot form that is completely optimized for that. You know, in manufacturing, in highly advanced factories, you see robotics technology everywhere, and it'll be an arm designed to do a specific job over and over and over again without tiring, though it will also need maintenance in the long term. And this is where I think robotics really shines. It's when they are designed to be very, very specific to the task. Mm-hmm. The kind of general purpose domestic humanoid robot creates great headlines, creates a lot of media interest, and media interest and headlines can also mean investor interest in your project. Yeah. But what I have seen over covering this sector for a very long time is that eventually it all comes back to making these systems more specific and tailored to the job at hand. There's a great Irish company called Acara AI who were making humanoid robots in the care space. That's kind of a common area that people try to deploy these things in. And he was really cute. He was called Stevie. And I was kind of in love with him. But they've actually moved into a space of developing robotics for healthcare that are specifically designed for jobs like sterilizing a room. Something that is much safer to be done by a robot than by human beings.
Okay. I still want a robot who can empty the dishwasher and hang out the washing. That's all I'm looking for, you know. And if it's
needs a lot of dexterity to do that, though.
I know. I'm just, can someone get that sorted, please, in the next short time? That would be great. Thank you so much, Elaine. Elaine Burke, host of the For Tech's Sake.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.